Amazed at what the Bible records also. I don't know if you've meditated on it, but that's pretty gory. And that's war. There's no such thing as a pretty war. Verse 28. And Saul saw and knew that the Lord was with David, right? He thought surely those Philistines would, those 100 might kill him, and instead he killed 200 and he's still alive. And that Michal, Saul's daughter, loved him, and Saul was yet the more afraid. This is the idea, the word here is terrified. He is shaking in his boots. And Saul became David's enemy continually. What a shame, David loved him. Then the princes of the Philistines went forth. And it came to pass after they went forth. See, what does that mean? Remember, to go forth means to go forth what? Into war, okay? See, in other words, God didn't bother to write. You say, why didn't he say that? You're supposed to know that by now. I taught you that last week. You know what I mean? God, you're supposed to understand that. They went forth. In other words, yes, the Philistines did hear about this desecration. And now they've come out to avenge it, but look what happened. David behaved himself more wisely than all the servants of Saul, so that his name was much esteemed. In other words, when he went to war, they came forth against him to war, he behaved himself more wisely than ever. That means he devised new techniques and new tactics. He whipped them again. And this just continually is terrifying. You know, it says his name was much esteemed. Gosh, that reminds me of scriptures about Jesus. Hebrews 1:4, he was given a name that is above every name. Philippians 2:9, that it, the mention of his name, every knee would bow and every tongue confess. I want to finish up. Bear with me just a few more minutes. Chapter 19, verse 1. Saul spoke to Jonathan, his son, and to all his servants that they should kill David. Hey, have you got it? This guy is desperate. He tried to kill him personal with a javelin, failed. He has sent him into battle deliberately, time and time again, giving him impossible feats to accomplish, he thought, but David just keeps succeeding. Now, why is David succeeding? Because he's such a great warrior? No. Great. How many, listen to me. How many of you know that the greatest warriors get killed in battle? Someone will just, quote, draw a bow at a venture and just let the arrow fly. I don't care how great a warrior you are, someone can walk right up behind you in the middle of a battle and just run you through. Someone can just shoot an arrow and it just finds you. But God has a plan for David. Will you believe that God has a plan for you? And that until God has done with you what he intended. Now, don't go to bed thinking tonight, Robert, this trap. There's some great unfinished task for me to do. No, no, now you're trying to do it. You missed the whole point. No. You may have already finished what God gave you to do and die on the way home or before the lesson's over or in your sleep. We don't know what. There's no great unfinished work for anybody. How do you know that, Floyd? I read the Bible. I read the book of Revelation, and I couldn't find anywhere in there that anything you did or I did, you know, is going to alter how that finishes. It's written. And it didn't say, look, I'm serious. And it didn't say, thanks to Floyd's great efforts, the revelation can successfully end. So no, there's no great unfinished work. That's totally different from what I'm saying. I'm saying, Ed, that until God has accomplished in your life what he put you here for, which may have been no more than, in fact it never is, than just to please him. How many of you know that's the greatest call? That's the greatest call, to please God. The next question comes, well, how do you do that? Well, believe me, it isn't as hard as everybody makes it. In fact, it's so easy, we all miss it. David had found it back there with the sheep on the plains and hills of Bethlehem. That they should kill David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. You'll remember they went into covenant back in chapter 18. He delighted much in David, and Jonathan told David, saying, Saul, my father, seeks to kill thee. Now therefore, I pray thee, take heed to thyself until the morning, and abide in a secret place, and hide thyself. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where you are. And I will talk with my father about you, and what I see, that will I tell you. And Jonathan spoke good of David unto Saul his father, and said unto him, Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he's not sinned against you. I love Jonathan. He talks to his daddy and uses the word sin. What a man. What a son. What a boy. Hard to talk to your own daddy and use the word sin, isn't it? Notice none of his counselors in our 2 weeks ago, his counselors, when the demon was oppressing him, wouldn't tell him it was because of sin to get him to repent. They just said, hire a musician. He said, Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he has not sinned against you, and because his works have been toward you very good. For he did put his life in his hand and slew the Philistine, and the Lord wrought a great salvation for all Israel. You saw it, and you did rejoice. I love it. He's rehearsing. Why? He's telling his daddy why he should love David. You were there. You saw it. You rejoice over it. Why then will you sin against innocent blood to slay David without a cause? Now that's beautiful. Because that right there proves that everything I've taught you tonight is right. I told you and showed you all the incredible disappointments that Saul has foisted on David, that God has let happen to him. The anointed of God, and yet God let all that disappointment happened to him. See, we don't think that's going to happen to us as Christians, but it's biblical that it does. Quit reading paperbacks from Tulsa. Come to the book. And Jonathan has borne testimony that in all those disappointments, David had not once, look at it, why will you sin against innocent blood to slay David without a cause? David had done nothing. No retaliation. I tell you, when I read this story, I'm shamed. A good shame, but I'm shamed. I mean, I'm 3,000 years later with a whole Bible. David, look. David didn't even have the book of Psalms. He was writing them. He didn't have the New Testament. Look at all this Bible David didn't have that Brother Floyd has and pours over and studies. And I don't handle it that good. What a man. What a boy. He's only 18 or 19 here. Verse 6. Now, what have we observed? I want you to see it. I love Jonathan for this. You hear me? Jonathan has been put on the spot. A wicked spot to be put on. I want all of you to hear it. Saul knew he was there. He knew of the blood covenant that Jonathan had made with David. And Saul knows how to make a covenant. He's an Israeli. And as all of you know that have heard me teach on the covenant, part of the covenant was the blessings and the curses. And as they cut themselves and bled, they would say, God, so do to me and more. As they split the animal that made the covenant, God, so do to me and more. Split me down the backbone and right through the skull if I ever break the covenant. God, so do to me and more. Saul knows this covenant has been made, and he calls on Jonathan to dishonor it and to break it. No real man of God would think of breaking a covenant. But Saul, in his jealousy, has let it completely get out of hand. He's demon-oppressed now. And so Jonathan warns. He not only warns, and I love it, he not only warns, hear me, he intercedes. Golly, see, that's going one more step. He interceded on David's behalf, and I want you to hear this. In doing so, Jonathan gives up a kingdom for the love of a friend and for the love of God. But he gave up a kingdom to receive the kingdom. Do you hear me? Later we're going to read in chapter 23, verse 16, when David is hiding from from Saul. Jonathan finds him and goes to him, and he says, "David, David, someday you will be king." See, how did he know that? He's heard that Samuel has anointed him, and that Samuel has said it, and therefore, Samuel, now listen, you got all these guys claiming to be prophets and apostles running all over town, running all over Texas, everywhere. Hadn't got into the works of an apostle, hadn't got into the works of a prophet, but they're claiming everything. But see, had one come in one day and told me God sent him here and that he was the apostle of the entire area and that I was to submit to him. And I said, "Golly, how are you so sure that God hadn't already told me I'm the apostle and that you're supposed to submit to me? How are you so sure of that? Why are you so naughty? What wicked man in Mobile, Alabama told you that? Because you never heard God say it." I said, "If God had said it, I would have known it when you came in." I said, "I'll submit to you as a brother, but as a self-professed apostle, hardly." Now you listen to me. See, what I'm saying is, when they swing in and proclaim, if they are what they say they are, they don't have to tell us. We'll find out. Listen to me. How many of you have observed, I'm a Bible teacher. I haven't noticed that I put that in the paper. That, you know, every time y'all come in, I announce, "I am a teacher from God." I kind of figured if I just came in here and taught God's Word night after night, night after night, night after night, you guys would catch on. The question is, how old is Jonathan? Okay, look, some of you were here last week and some weren't. And for those of you that weren't, let me do it real fast. Listen, watch it. You'll love it. The Scriptures tell us that Saul reigned 40 years. And that when Saul died, David became king, being 30 years old. Start right there, back up 30 years, and it doesn't take very much to realize that David was born 10 years after Saul began to reign. 40 minus 30. 1 Samuel chapter 13 says, in the second year of Saul's reign, in other words, 8 years before David is born, are we with me? That Jonathan led 1,000 men into battle against the Philistines, i.e., right there, Jonathan is at least, minimum, 20 years old to even be in the army, and moreover, he's ahead of 1,000 men. So if he is 20 years old there, plus 8, before David is born, have we got it? Jonathan is an absolute minimum of 28 years older than David. What a story. This is not two 18-year-olds buddies, you know, old football buddies. This is a grown man. Listen to me. If David is 18 when he killed Goliath, then Jonathan is at least 46 years old when he made the covenant with him. In other words, I'm trying to tell you a beautiful story of a man in his middle age that submitted to a boy because the hand of God had picked the boy. And Jonathan stepped aside. This is a man of God. See, do you see how much more precious it is? It's precious when an older man will submit to a younger man. Old Papa Costin, the old missionary, when God called me and Papa came back, and I'd been ministering about a year and Papa came through, I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe how he would just sit there and insist that I minister when I wanted to sit down and let that old war horse that had some wisdom minister. Listen, you can have a lot of knowledge and not have any wisdom. You can have a high IQ and not have sense enough to get in out of the rain. See, young men can be very intelligent, but very few of them are wise. And the proof of that is very few older men are wise. Okay. Okay. You like that, didn't you? Okay, now let me finish for tonight real quickly. So yes. And incredible. Jonathan is worth our noting here. As a supporting actor in our play. Okay. Verse 6, and Saul hearkened unto the voice of Jonathan. And Saul swore, as the Lord liveth, he shall not be slain. You know, even Even people that are walking away from God can be touched. But unfortunately, we're going to see that a lot of people that aren't walking with God will say some wonderful things and bite the bullet, and by biting the bullet, they just can't live up to it. Verse 7, Jonathan called David. Jonathan showed him all those things, and Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past. And there was war again. And David went out and fought with the Philistines, stuck record, and slew them with a great slaughter, another stuck record. And they fled from him. I want y'all to be paying attention to all these victories over the Philistines, because later lessons, this is going to be worth our remembering. Verse 9, and the evil spirit from the Lord was upon Saul. Why? Well, golly, look, just back in verse 6, Jonathan's appeal had worked. He repented. What was it that got things going bad again? Verse 8, beloveds. You see, Saul had a besetting sin. Saul simply would not deal with his jealousy of the throne against David. And I want to read it to you in the New Testament. Just listen to it real quickly for time's sake. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26 and 27. Be ye angry and sin not. Let not the sun go down on your wrath. He wouldn't do that. He wouldn't deal with it and get it settled before he went to bed. All of you in here that are married, let me just give you best advice I can ever give you from a single scripture to keep your marriage together. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. Before y'all go to sleep, get it settled. Never go to sleep unsettled. Now that doesn't mean that I'm counseling you to stay up all night, because you won't settle it. See, then you don't let it fester. Neither give place to the devil, verse 27 says. See, Saul wouldn't do that. And so by not dealing with that jealousy, he opens himself up to another demonic attack. And here it says, the evil spirit from the Lord. Did you see that? How many of you can read that? See, I want you to understand that demons can't just go run, attack anybody, helter-skelter, oh, look, there's somebody now. I think I'll jump on them. You see, God, no. Only if God allows. Satan can't just, we're not orphans on the devil's doorstep. He can just do anything he wants. Now, notice again, it doesn't say Saul was demon-possessed. It says, again, this is the third time, that the evil spirit came upon him, not in him. I know it's popular to teach that he was, but he wasn't. If he was demon-possessed, then it isn't his fault he's throwing javelins. He is under total control of a demon. But that is not the way this story is presented nor taught. Oh, the demon is bugging him. He's encouraging him, but he doesn't make him. No, that doctrine may go over at your place, but not at mine. If you come tell me that the devil made you fornicate, there may be some stupid preachers in this town that'll let you believe that'll believe that, but this is not one. No, you did it. He didn't make you. And not if you're a Christian. Now, if you're a pagan, I'd believe it. You demon-possessed, I can believe that. But if you're a Christian, I'm sorry, Christians are totally accountable for their actions at all times. At all times. That is what the Bible teaches. And it says, as he sat in his house with his javelin in his hand, and David played with his hand. Now, David is probably playing there, a lyre, L-Y-R-E. Now, I love that. I want to point it out one more time as we're closing. David has had great success in our story tonight as a warrior and as a leader of men. David is esteemed highly by the peoples. But yet it was not beneath his, quote, dignity to humble himself and to play for Saul, who has not befriended him. Incredible. Nor has he refused, listen to this, nor has he refused on the grounds, well, that's too dangerous an assignment based on what happened last time I played for that rascal. Right, now watch it. And Saul sought to smite David, even to the wall with a javelin, but he slipped away out of Saul's presence. And he smote the javelin into the wall, and David fled and escaped by night. In other words, this was a real serious throw. It stuck in that wall. And again, I must point out, and David didn't pick it up and throw it back at him. Verse 12. Saul also sent messengers unto David's house to watch him and to slay him in the morning. All right, this is the secret police now. Okay. And Michal, David's wife, told him, saying, if thou save not thy life tonight, tomorrow thou shalt be slain. So Michal let David down through a window, and he went and fled and escaped. I've seen that M.O. before. How about the spies at the wall of Jericho? Okay, and how about in the New Testament, in Corinthians, Paul being let down to escape the king of Damascus that was after him? All right, so here we go again. And Michal took an image. Now this is the Hebrew word teraphim. It means an idol, like what you worship. So we see David has really picked quite a honey here in Saul's daughter. Okay, now listen. As we're going to see this, sure she loved him, but she loved him because he won the Heisman Trophy. Okay. I mean, everyone's talking about him. He's good looking. He's the greatest warrior they've got. He's leading the army to victory. But Michal is not, and as we'll see her life unfold, she isn't a Christian. She took an image and laid it in the bed and put a pillow of goat's hair for its head. Now, I might add, a good Palestinian goat, that means that hair was black. And when you read Song of Solomon that we read several nights ago, Chapter 5, verse 11, describes Jesus as having, and Solomon, as having black hair. That's one of the few things we know about him. There's a volume out called the Arco volume. And in that, it says he had soft brown hair and blue eyes. A Jew with soft brown hair and blue eyes. Not too likely unless there's a lot of other blood involved. You hear what I'm saying to you? No. He's ruddy-complected but has black hair. Verse 14. When Saul sent messengers to take David, she lied like a dog and said, he is sick. This is really trusting God. And Saul sent the messengers again to see David, saying, bring him to me in the bed. Pick the bed up and bring the whole thing. I don't care if he's too sick to get out of bed, bring the whole thing and bring him to me. All right? I love it, don't you? that I may slay him. Verse 16, when the messengers were come in, behold. Hey, behold is a shock word, right? You rip the cover off, and there is this idol, okay, and the goat hair for that word would mean for a head, okay? And Saul said unto Michal, why have you deceived me so, and sent away my enemy, that he has escaped? And Michal answered Saul, he said unto me, let me go, why should I kill thee? Now, let me say this. Michal's schemes reveal to us the truth that David is trapped, pitifully trapped, in an unequal yoke. I want to read to you a psalm that David wrote this very night, the very night before he escaped with his life. Just a few parts from the psalm. I'm reading to you from Psalm 59. For time's sake, let me just read. I want to read four verses to you. Listen to the first three. And it says at the beginning of the psalm, it's a psalm of David when Saul sent and they watched the house to kill him. My point is, while they're watching the house to kill him, David is praying this psalm. He writes it and in effect prays it back to God, Anna, and we're going to see his faith as he does it. Deliver me from mine enemies, O my God. Defend me from them that rise up against me. Deliver me from the workers of iniquity and save me from bloody men. For lo, they lie in wait for my soul. The mighty are gathered against me, not for my transgression nor for my sin, O Lord. He isn't saying he never sinned. What he's saying is, this that's happening to me is not the result of any of my sins. But I want you to hear verse 16. Listen to this. Now that's the prayer of deliverance. He continues going, but listen to the statement of faith.
것입니까?
Verse 16, but I will sing of thy power, yea, I will sing aloud of thy mercy in the morning. That's faith. He wrote that to God and prayed that to God before it happened. He trusted God. You see, that was a highlight. How could he do it? He believed Samuel. He believed the Lord through Samuel. In other words, hear me. Samuel had a track record as a man of God that we could believe his word, unlike these swingers that come through and claim to be great men of God. David says to himself that night, I can't die. God has shown me I can't. I should have lost to Goliath and didn't. Why, all these battles, surely some lucky Philistine would have gotten me. Saul, that great warrior that he is, he should have nailed me, didn't. Yes, David, quick.
Why, if David had just gotten married, why would he still
He didn't have to, it's obvious. It's a great point. Did anyone hear it? He's just gotten married. What's he doing going to war? Because as we read last week, Deuteronomy chapter 20 told us he didn't have to. Well, he probably, as I heard up on the front row, was safer going to war. But as you all know, you can be put under a lot of pressure by division managers. You know, David is one of the major warriors. His very presence in a battle after what he's done, his very presence would encourage the rest of the men. So you can just see the pressure they would put on him, you know, to lead in. And besides, after all, Saul's king, and that's your whole point, isn't it, Dave? It's obvious that Saul is king and is not exempting David, and you can hear it. Now, David, normally I would go by the scripture and not make you go. But then everyone would think it was nepotism and I was, you know, as my son-in-law, I was letting you off. And after all, David, your presence is such an encouragement to soldiers. But we've already read why. I want the Philistines to kill him. Okay? Last points. I want you to see Michal's answer in verse 17. It's incredible to me that the man after God's own heart, the man that we've bragged on tonight, could be yoked to such a woman. See, her answer totally misrepresents David. Now, I want you to hear it. It's most important. I don't know if any of you caught it. She has depicted by her answer in verse 17, David as a man so desperate that in order to save his own life, he would even slay a woman. The slayer of Goliath reduced to that. Do you hear what I'm saying? You're Saul. I'm Saul. Think about it. What would you think if your daughter came to you and said, Dad, I wanted to help, I wanted to restrain him, but he threatened to kill me. Shall I be brutal? Saul already was angry with David, was fearful of David. Now we have a father who feels his daughter's life has been threatened by this man? Look at me. I am a father and I have daughters. One of the quickest ways for you to make a hasty exit to heaven would be for you to threaten one of my daughters. Okay? You better be mean. Because when you threaten one of my daughters, all the papa bear gets in me. Hey, and I may be old, but you know, you ever hear this thing called adrenaline? Listen, you may be stronger, but when I'm defending my child, I'm strong. Okay, so her wicked testimony against David is not a good thing. But you understand, Michal has nothing better to offer. A worldling that doesn't know the Lord, Brad, can do nothing except think of schemy ways to come through. Let this be a lesson to all of us as Christians who are running into problems like this, and we think that it's up to us to lie